The views and opinions expressed in this podcast by the host and or the guest do not necessarily reflect the views of the host and or Paranormal Buzz Radio and or its sponsors. Use of any material produced by Paranormal Buzz Radio without express written consent is prohibited. Paranormal Buzz Radio will not be held responsible for you holding your knees, crying, and rocking in a corner in a puddle of your own urine, or being beheaded by a group of children in the cornfield. In fact, if you come across a group of children in a cornfield, we promise to make fun of you as you run away screaming in terror. Listener discretion is advised.
Listening to RAP Paranormal and Friends with your hosts
Cam Purvis
and Allison Robinson. Make sure to check us out on our Facebook pages, REP Paranormal and Friends and REP Paranormal Busters, for up-to-date show information and events.
Another night of REP Paranormal and Friends. We have a special guest tonight. He's a psychotherapist, former monk, two-time Emmy Award winner, and award-winning author of over 20 books and CDs on mindfulness and spirituality. Also, an international mindfulness expert, speaker, trainer, and has taught over 15,000 mental health clinicians, physicians, nurses, and how to use mindfulness interventions for depression, anxiety, trauma, pain, and stress-related conditions, and also the author of Traveler. So please welcome Donald Altman to the show. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Great to be here with you today.
Yes, it's a pleasure to have you on. You've got quite the extended background on yourself. So can you kind of give us a little background on yourself? First of all, what made you become a monk and then go into psychotherapy?
Allison, that's what happened. I never thought that was going to happen in my life either. Sometimes you end down a road or take a path that you just like, how did I get here? I was going through some struggles in my life around that time, and somebody said to me, you know, there's a monk I'd like you to meet. And so this might be a cautionary tale, because I met this monk, and he was really, God, he has such a great kindness. I mean, you never meet somebody and just feel a sense of compassion, and it was really something you could actually, very palpable. Mm-hmm. And so I met him only for about 15 minutes, but I remember thinking, wow, how did he get to be like that? I mean, how does somebody transform inwardly to be, at least he appeared to be so kind and, you know, and caring. And well, a few months later, I went through a difficult time again, and this kind of pattern was repeating in my life, and I'd seen it, but I didn't know what to do about it. And you know, I know we've all been there. You know, things happen, and often they happen again and again. It's like, God, who, you know, how come I keep going down this road?
Right.
And who brought this can of worms? So I decided to look at, you know, my own can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into monastery when I realized he would be the main teacher. And he was from Burma. He was a well-known teaching monk. Yeah, he came to this country in the late 70s. I learned more about him later. But it was an amazing experience for me, because it changed my life. Mm-hmm. And I was able to look at my own can of worms more deeply, you know. And I wasn't in the monastery for a whole long time, but I went in.
Mm-hmm.
In that tradition, by the way, it was the Theravada, the old school of Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
where you don't take a lifetime vow like the Benedictines do or the Jesuits. Certain monastics, they take a lifetime vow. That wasn't the case here. So I was there for a while, and I was ready to leave. one of the monks continued to teach me even after I left. And but I was really ripe for the experience, and so I it really helped me look more deeply into myself and got me on a new path. And when I got out of the monastery, I started doing workshops. I was a mindless eater, and that was emotional eating, and that was part of what my problem was. And there's a whole lot of research about when we're stressed, or a lot of times we try to. It's not about what I'm eating; it's about what's eating me, isn't it?
Yes. I actually find myself stress eating all the time.
Well, you're not alone. About 30% of people stress eat.
Yeah.
So it, so I got out and I started doing these workshops about, spiritual leading, and people would come up to me after the workshop and they kind of whisper in my ear, oh, I've got this anorexia problem, or I have this bulimia problem. And I didn't know how to help them. So I went back to school, which was another thing I never expected to do.
Right.
And became a psychotherapist, and I ended up working in an eating disorder clinic for several years. And, it was really an amazing journey for me personally, and to try to help those people. But so when you emotionally eat, how do you work with that yourself?
I honestly don't know. Especially at my employment, I don't always have time to sit down and eat like a proper meal. So I'll find myself snacking in between patients, and then when I get home, I'm just so worn out, stressed out from working all day that I'll just gorge myself until I feel sick. But I feel like I'm always hungry. That's another issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there are ways to work with that. And, I remember one lady who came we had a group, and so she came to the group, and she would go up to a food place, and she had a feeling that she in her body, and maybe different from what you're feeling, it was more like the stress for you. But she had this feeling and she wanted it to go away. So she would just go up and go through the drive-thru and order, 2,000-3,000 calories worth of food.
Oh my goodness.
And And then, the food didn't go away. But what I said to her was, I said, the next time you go up there, I want you to see if you have a name to that feeling, And when she came back to the group, her story, I was like, we were all shocked to hear it. And she told us, she sat in that parking lot for about 40 minutes, just trying to give a name to that feeling.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was loneliness. Mm-hmm. That was the feeling.
Oh.
And when she realized, when she gave it that name, she said, "Wow, I'm really feeling loneliness here." And I'm trying. She says, "That's not physical hunger. Food's not going to make this feeling really go away. Maybe for a while." So she didn't go through the drive-thru. She went back home. So it's a beautiful story, but it shows how sometimes we, if you tune in the body, and that's a lot of what I do with mindfulness and a lot of my work, and a lot of my books, is to get people into the body and get out of their heads, right? Or we have these thoughts that are just spinning all the time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because, I'm a person, I work out probably 5 to 6 days a week. I go to the gym.
Oh, that's great.
But I constantly feel like I'm hungry. I can't, feed the need. So I gorge myself. And then I feel bad after eating all that. So I'm like, well, I'm not making any progress. I'm going to the gym all the time. You can't see progress because I just shove whatever's,
you probably need to get some good food during the day, because what happens is if you don't get enough, protein throughout the day, then you'll be more subject to that stress. And then if you haven't been eating throughout the day, you're kind of setting yourself up for overeating.
Right.
And then if you overeat, then you feel bad about it.
It
creates a cycle,
Right.
I think so many of us get caught. And I was caught in that for a long time, actually, for many years.
It's a hard cycle. It is. I think a lot of people actually, like you said, go through that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, that's why mindfulness is so helpful for a lot of things for stress, for depression, or even anxiety. What happens with mindfulness is it changes how you relate to the depression, changes your relationship to the thoughts that you're having, so that, it doesn't instantly make you better, but it changes how your relationship, even to those thoughts around, or the feeling around, that I've got to go eat all this food now.
Yeah.
And then, what I also do is I have people think about how can you, start to understand your hunger level better? Because if your hunger is in the, you know, let's say on a 1 to 10 scale, if your hunger is like 0 or 1, you don't have any hunger at all, or if it's a 7, 8, or 9, or 10, when it's in the upper range, you know, you're going to probably eat the things that you wouldn't normally eat. You're going to take whatever you see, and you might, you might overeat it. So I want people to kind of check into their body, start to notice, when is my hunger, you know, like in the 4, 5, 6 range? And so get something then. Don't wait till it gets up in the 7, 8, 9, 10. Mm-hmm. And that could be very helpful for people.
Yes, I think so too. I just need to be able to find time in between to eat something properly. Like I'll take, you know, turkey sticks and cheese and things like that, but that's literally all I'll eat during the day. And then when I come home, I'm like, oh, well, I'm making supper. Here's a bag of chips. I'm going to, you know, scarf on these while I'm making supper because I'm so hungry and it's quick and easy and it's right there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and even mindful eating, and I have a mindful eating program called 12 Weeks to Mindful Eating, Eat Savor, and it's a program that, you know, it takes time to go through it and to really kind of change your wiring around food, because it's very kind of, you know, we get set in a lot of patterns when we're very young, especially around food, and so changing them takes time, and so we want to be kind to ourselves, and that, you know, while you're going through that process.
Exactly, yes. Now, I know we're talking about the mindfulness and things like that, but I did have a couple more questions kind of about your time as a monk in the monastery.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to know, what was the most interesting thing that you learned during your time in the monastery?
Wow, that's a great question. I think maybe one of those interesting things I learned was that I am not my thoughts. Because a lot of times, you know, you have a thought and you identify with it. And if you identify, you grab onto that thought, and it can pull you in different directions. You know, it's like if I think, oh, I'm a depressed person, or I'm just a failure, I can't, you know, I can't succeed, or I'm this or I'm that. If you take those thoughts at face value, you know, that's gonna could really affect your life in a very profound way, and maybe not a good way, right?
Right.
So what I learned in the monastery was to kind of learn how to get curious about my thoughts and not take them at face value, but to just observe them. And that's part of the meditation process. And that's what you do when you meditate, but you could even do it just in a moment, just to get curious, right? When you have a thought, you'll say, well, whoa, that's interesting. Where did that come from? How far back does that go in my life? Right.
Yeah.
So getting curious is a great way, I think, to kind of change that old pattern. Because if you keep having the same thought over and over, you're kind of wiring your brain into that. One time a lady came to see me, if I could share a little story.
Yeah,
this lady came to see me, and you know, and the first session with her, she said, kept going on and on, my mother, she abused me. I hope your dog is enjoying this story too.
Oh, it must be Kim's dog. It's not mine. Yeah. I was going to say, you're a dog. I don't know whose it is, because mine are inside, but they're laying down being quiet. So.
Mine's in the kennel, and he don't like it.
Oh, wow. That's the problem. Yeah. He has a feeling he doesn't like. So anyway, this client kept saying to me, you know, my mother, she abused me. She mistreated me. And that was like the story that she kept repeating. And, you know, my initial time with her, I listened, and I said, oh, I'm really sorry. And, you know, I want to hear more about that story, but we need to get other information in our first session here. But she kept repeating that story. And finally I asked her, I said, you know, I'm kind of curious. I wonder, have you ever counted the number of times you told that story about your mother in the course of a day? And she paused. She looked at me like I had, you know, like she couldn't believe what I just asked her. And she said, it's funny. She says, I have tried to count how many times I tell that story. She said, but I always lose track. She said, but what I do know is when I don't tell that story about my mother and how she abused me, I'm a lot happier.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. So that's probably the most interesting thing that I learned in the monastery, the most thing that made a big difference for me. But also, you know, can I say one more? The loving kindness practice.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The loving kindness practice. And this is great. I mean, this is how I believe that teacher of mine had developed that great sense of love and compassion and understanding by doing this ancient 2,600-year-old meditation. Mm-hmm. And so I learned that and was able to bring that into my life, and it really helped a lot. And I taught it to a lot of people, and I think it really is helpful. So that's the other thing I wanted to mention.
Yes, and that's a good one. Those are good news to have from that. I had one more, couple more questions about that. You know, you kind of hear things about, you know, the monks being able to, like, heat their bodies.
Mm, yeah.
How do they do that to where they can, you know, like, if it's snowing, that they can, like, kind of...
They can literally melt the snow around them.
Have you seen that? Have you done it?
Well, I've done something different. Uh-huh. And actually, it's kind of, well, you know, that's called a TUMMO, T-U-M-M-O practice. And that was, the monks in Tibet would do that. And that's a very harsh environment. You know, it's super cold.
Yes.
So they would learn how to do this. And I think it was more of a survival thing, but it was meditation where you would just focus on raising your body temperature along with different breathing practices. What I actually had people do, I had a little thermometer, like a finger thermometer, and you could attach it to your, you know, one of your fingers.
Oh, yeah.
And, and so I would have clients, because it's been shown, if you can raise the temperature of your extremities, you're less likely to experience stress. And so I would have them visualize sticking their hands in hot sand and feeling the sun beating down on their hands, and, you know, and they'd have this thermometer, and they would raise the temperature in their fingers 5 to 10 degrees.
Oh, wow.
Right in my office, and within a matter of like 7-8 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And they were all shocked. But when you bring your heat to your extremities, it actually helps you feel less stressed.
Mm.
So anybody actually can learn how to do that, that practice. And but it's really neat to, you know, you can just play around with that and just picture yourself being in a warm pool of water, mm-hmm. like a hot tub or a hot springs.
Uh-huh.
Or picture the sun coming down your hands. Picture your hands resting on hot sand. And after you do that long enough, you'll start to feel the warmth and the heat, or get one of those little finger thermometers, and
mm-hmm.
you'll see it. So, I mean, that's a little, like a small version of the TUMMO practice.
Okay. Yes. That, maybe I should, I need to try something like that. I have Raynaud's, and so my hands are always really cold and clammy.
Oh, okay.
So maybe.
That may actually, try that. And.
Yeah.
And I can actually, I had a practice of that written down somewhere. I'd be happy to send that to you also.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That might help me. So that way I can actually feel my fingertips from time to time.
Yeah, that would be good.
All right. And then, also, how do you think that, the time that you were a monk, how do you think that has impacted your life today?
Well, like I say, you know, I couldn't have imagined that it turned my life in a different direction. I mean, I was writing before that, and you know, all my writing became more spirituality and self-help work, and that's important to me. If I'm going to write something, that it has a positive benefit for the people who read it. Mm-hmm. So I always include a lot of practices in my books. My book, 101 Mindful Ways to Build Resilience, has all these great ways to, you know, if you feel stuck, you're overcoming an obstacle, mm-hmm. all these great ways to just kind of reconnect with little practices. Every page is a little practice, right? There's a practice for breathing, a practice for gratitude. God, gratitude is so fantastic, mm-hmm. Allison, yeah, for just turning your, you know, changing your whole perspective on life.
Right. Yes, it is.
So that, I think, that was... And, you know, and then going back to school, becoming a psychotherapist. So it affected all areas of my life, really.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
And I couldn't have predicted it, of course, but.
Right. You're cutting out just a little bit.
Oh, okay.
He's not on my end.
Oh.
He's good on my end.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just hearing bits and pieces. So I'm just
gonna... Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on.
I'm putting the words together. It might be my internet too. It's been kind of laggy, so.
And I hear both of you perfectly.
Okay. So
coming through good. Yeah.
Okay. So it could just be my internet tonight might be a little.
It's not my computer this time.
Yeah. Usually it's Kim's computer that acts up, but Now, you do have this book out called Travelers. Do you want to kind of give us a little bit of background on your book for our listeners?
Sure,
And how you came
absolutely.
about this book?
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat of a departure, right, from my regular spirituality books and
Right.
the nonfiction, although I did write fiction many years ago. And but this book really came out of a desire to help people connect with something that could only do with fiction. So, like, for example, if I were to ask either you or your audience, what's your favorite story? What's your favorite book or favorite film? You'd name a film, and then, there's probably a character in that story that had to overcome some obstacles. There's some way, reason why you connected and resonated with that story. And I would use that with clients a lot. I would ask them about that. And so I thought, wow, I would like Travelers to be one of those books that when people are asked, what's a story that helps you think about overcoming grief or, seeing your life in a bigger way and, connecting with the mysterious and the wonder of life, that they would think of this book of Travelers. And so that's what I wanted to do. I think it's a book that, yeah, it's a story, and it's a story of a psychiatrist who it takes you into a psych ward, actually. If you've never been in a psych ward or wondered what it's like, this book actually takes you in. It shows you in a very realistic way how chaotic it is, crazy it is, right? And all that,
Right.
because I've worked in those settings. And so, and then, it shows you just how the mental health field kind of works and how it's gotten kind of mechanical, right? It kind of, and which isn't a good thing, I don't think, because it kind of,
No.
and so this main character in the story, he's dealing with great loss. He lost his daughter in the story. And so he's devastated, and it's creating a wedge between him and his wife. And it's really interesting. When I hear people talk about the story and they tell me what they got from it, that's a big part of it. They say, oh, it's about the relationship, and how he and his wife are able to overcome that loss and save their relationship, But other people tell me it's about, oh, it's about men's emotionality, because the psychiatrist in the story, he really has a lot of emotions about everything that's happened in his life,
Right.
and so he's trying to heal himself and trying to save this young suicidal patient who comes to the clinic who is in danger of being caught in this mental health system, right? And he's trying to help him, and he comes across this mysterious traveler, and I don't want to give away the story, but this traveler in the story, she's got a little dog that is on her shoulder,
No,
and he and kind of like the dog that we got on the show here. And
Yeah, that makes
yeah, she calls herself Traveler Jackie, and she's got a little dog named Bear. And so Bear, and Bear's like very sentient. He knows what's going on, right? And they do things that are out of our normal reality, kind of miraculous things. And he actually thinks he's going losing his mind, right? He doesn't understand this, and so he's got to grapple. It's also a story of overcoming grief, but it's a story of how sometimes we need to get beyond the grip of the rational mind, right? That materialistic stranglehold that the rational has on us. And I think in some ways that's a stranglehold that we have on the in the mental health system sometimes, and that we need to start to not view our experiences as pathological necessarily, but as put them in the context of our what does it mean to be human, right? What does it
Right.
mean to go through different struggles? And maybe this is a time for me to have be initiated into greater meaning or a spiritual initiation. I mean, there's a lot of mystery around what is happening to us when we go through our lifetime. And so, and I had major depressive disorder in my 20s, for example. And it was at that time I started to have what I guess you'd call, out of body experiences and all these different experiences
Right.
that I think were actually like a kind of like a release valve that my consciousness allowed me to see more and to say, hey, you're depressed and this is bad and you feel, you're stuck in this really bad situation and you don't have any hope, but here we're going to show you something that you're not just this, there's more you than this, right?
Right.
And I saw that it gave me a sense of relief, so it wasn't like I thought, oh my God, I'm going crazy, but I because it didn't last for a long time, and I got it in glimpses throughout my life, even to this day, and I accepted it as part of, an extended part of what we all are, right?
Right.
We don't have to see ourselves just in a physical way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you can't define yourself by that way. I mean, even our senses are limited to some degree.
Right.
And Kim's dog has able to sense things that we can't sense as humans.
Right.
So, right. And there are just, and some people are wired to see things beyond mm-hmm. what the normal six senses are capable of viewing. So, we need to, so that's what I wanted this book to do. I wanted this book to explore those ideas, give people hope. So it's really a book of inspiration and hope for, you know, overcoming not just mental health issues, but any grief issues that you're dealing with, and finding ways of seeing the bigger picture. And it's a mystical journey that this psychiatrist is taken into. Now, he doesn't want to go on that journey because he's very steeped in his, you know, his psychiatric, you know, scientific viewpoint of things, mm-hmm. but he finds that he has to, it's, you know, sometimes we're called to take a journey, right?
Right, yes.
And so sometimes we need to listen to that.
Exactly. I agree with that 100%. Now with this, and we're talking about therapies and things like this, do you think there is a certain type of therapy that works best?
Well, you know, that's a great question, too. Mm-hmm. You're giving me some good questions here, Allison. You know, and I think a lot of people wonder about that.
Right.
You know, and because there's so many. And in the book, actually, in Travelers, you get to see how a therapist thinks. And he's using a number of different therapies with this patient, and his family ends up coming in, too. So there's a thing called, there's a family therapy he uses, internal family systems, and cognitive behavioral, and some mindfulness stuff. And so, but I really feel that the best therapy is the relationship that you have with your patient.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever modality you use, you know, and you want to use something that works for the patient, obviously. So, I mean, if the patient is a very verbal person, you want to maybe use something cognitive behavioral, uses words. And so that would match up with the patient. But sometimes you want to use things a patient isn't verbal. Maybe they're very visual. Mm-hmm. So you want to use a therapy that maybe has more imagery for them.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to match that up. But I think the most important thing is how you have a rapport. You know, if you're open mm-hmm. toward your client, if you're non-judging for them, mm-hmm. toward them, you're not, you know, somebody can tell if you feel like you're blaming them or some, you know,
right.
or you don't appreciate or you don't, or you're judging them for what they do. And that's not helpful, right?
Right.
So for a therapist to be open and caring and inviting in that way, I think that's, you know, some of the best moments I had with clients. I remember when something unusual happened, we both started to laugh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that was a very bonding moment. We just connected on a whole nother level. We kind of got something together, mm-hmm. you know, we shared that moment. And so I, you know, I feel very fortunate that I've had, you know, that people came to see me, and but my job was always to help them find their own way. It wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people would come, they'd say, and we have it too, even your friend will come to see you and they'll say, oh, Allison, mm-hmm. so what should I do here? This is really a bad situation. Right?
Right.
Maybe you might have an opinion, mm-hmm. but if you tell them what you think and they do it, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work out, who do they blame?
They'll blame me for it.
Or, right, they'll blame you.
Yep.
Or if it works out, you know, that's great, but they didn't come up with the idea themselves, and they're like, they may not really trust in themselves still,
right.
You know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's important to help people find their own wisdom, and I think we all have that, and it's just a matter of, I think, in some way, maybe quieting down our minds a little bit, finding a little stillness. So, like in Traveler Jackie, this mysterious traveler who helps the psychiatrist, mm-hmm. she tries to keep getting him to be silent, mm-hmm. to kind of quiet down in different ways, you know, and he doesn't
right.
understand that because he's busy all the time. He's reading journals. He's thinking about this. His mind's very active.
Mm-hmm.
And but when he discovers, when he's able to find greater quiet and that stillness,
mm-hmm.
that's when he starts to experience these things that are not quite in the normal realm anymore.
Right. Yes. It's a very fascinating book. So for our listeners, you need to read the book. And I found it on Amazon. I'm sure there's other places you can find it. Is it through John Hunt's publishing too?
Yeah, you can go to johnhuntpublishing.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you know, you could order from any bookstore, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all the online retailers should have it too, or indie books, any of the indie book stores should be able to order it too.
Yes, I highly recommend our listeners to read it, because I mean, if you think about it, you're talking about all these things, you know, all these emotions, anxiety, stress, depression. You help a lot of people with these things, and right now, there's really not a lot of help out there for some of these people. I know here in Iowa, there's really not anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of people may just get strapped on to medication. Is there anything that you think that can be done to improve, you know, the level of care for these people who actually need it?
Well, you know, if you're really in a lot of distress, I would say, you know, reach out. There may be a community resource that can help you. Don't be afraid to ask for help. That's the other thing I like to say. Mm-hmm. It's really important. And, you know, we keep trying to overcome the stigma of, you know, of mental health or depression or anxiety. But the truth is that so many people are experiencing these things. It's very normal, right? Yeah. So don't judge yourself harshly for that. I see depression, anxiety, any of this as a signal that something in your life is out of balance and you need to find a way to balance your life. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you need more fun. Maybe you need a better boundary around things in your life. You know, maybe whatever it is, it could be a lot of things, but you, it's just really a message telling you that, you know, things are, that maybe that you're just too stressed out, for example, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I had a lady who, I had doctors who would come to see me because they were under so much pressure of, they were afraid of getting sued and were they treating their patients right? That they had so much anxiety around that it didn't help them become better doctors, right? So I worked with them on that. Sometimes we get into a perfectionist mindset. We think everything's got to be just perfect, just so, right? And so, you know, anybody can, I've had truck drivers come to me who were, you know, having anxiety while they were driving their truck on the road or worried that they weren't doing enough with their lives or, you know, but here's the point I want to make is we're all heroes in our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, you're here every day and you're standing up and you're getting through your day. And if you, you know, do one thing for yourself, one thing for someone else, how beautiful is that, right? Just to give someone a word, give yourself a pat on the back. If you got dressed in the morning, that's, you know, I think getting dressed in the morning is highly underrated. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so we have to give ourselves credit for the little things that we do. And that, you know, that's important. That's important. You know, everybody is trying to make their way here. And in a way, that's kind of what travelers is about. At the deepest meaning of the word travelers is we're all traveling through this life. And, you know, if we help another traveler, somebody we meet, and help make their load a little easier, it helps us too.
Right.
Yeah. So when somebody's lonely, for example, I say, well, go help a lonely person. Right, talk to a lonely person, make yourself as lonely too.
Yeah, and that's actually what's the word I'm looking for? I'm having one of those brain blocks. I have a word in my head, but you know, you can't. But that is a good thing to think about. Like, you know, if you see somebody, you know, struggling, helping out, you know, just talk to them. That might be all that they need.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And just showing a little kindness. And again, that means kindness to ourselves. And I have a great little practice. In fact, it's related. I created this as kind of a personal mindfulness and loving kindness to ourselves practice. Can I share it with you?
It's really absolutely. Simple. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So what you do is it's going to be just taking one nice breath for yourself. Mm-hmm. But when you breathe in, I want you to think of something that you could use. Maybe you could use a love. Maybe you could use forgiveness. Maybe you could use some acceptance, some understanding, whatever it is. Maybe you could use more patience in your life, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Breathe in and then as breathing in, think, may I be patient. May I be loved. Mm-hmm. May I be safe. May I be secure, whatever that word is for you. And allow it, just feel it settle into all the cells of your body from the top of your head, down, all the way down to your arms, to your fingertips, all the way down the legs, down to the tips of your toes, okay? Mm-hmm. And then when you breathe out that breath for all other beings. So, you know, you breathe in, may I be safe. Then breathe out, may all beings be safe. Mm-hmm. May I be accepted and breathe out. May all beings be accepted. And so you're creating a circle of connection between yourself and all other persons. It's, you know, that's what the loving kindness meditation does in a much longer form. But here we're making it very simple. And I like to tell people too, you know, if you don't think that you are worthy of love, picture yourself as a little baby, right? A little child who is worthy of that love, right? And picture that love going to that little child that you once were, and it's still a part of you. And then exhale it out to all other beings. So it's a very simple practice, but use it when you're stressed. Use it when you're, you know, in transition. If you're in the car, you're stuck in traffic, or you're waiting in a line, just use it in these little moments when you feel it could help you, and it will support you, right? It will be a positive support.
I think I need to try doing some of that too. That might help me have a little more patience with especially at work, you know.
And then you can even, you know, if you for one breath, take another breath.
Right.
You're not limited to that one breath.
Yes, I might have to take several during the day, but I.
But I want to thank you for what you said about the book, and I'm glad you liked that.
Yes.
I think Traveler's Hat. I think that will inspire people.
Oh yeah,
to
absolutely.
Act. And to start to see things differently and see their lives differently too.
I agree with that as well. And so like I said, yeah, I hope everyone checks out your book, Travelers. It's a very good, and all your other books too.
Thank you.
I'll have to, you know, go on with those as well. But I did thoroughly enjoy reading Travelers. So I hope every one of our listeners does as well. But I have another question here.
Sure.
You know, before we start kind of wrapping things up, but
yeah.
Now, do you think that depression or like anxiety or things like that, do you think that can be passed down or like hereditary?
You know, I think it can have some hereditary component, but on the other hand, it's interesting. There are certain things that we believe that, for example, that bipolar may be genetic to some degree, for example, okay, and can run in families. But things like depression and anxiety, there may be a tendency, but that doesn't mean that you can't change it. I had somebody I worked with, and she had a history, family history of depression. She said, I think it was her grandfather, he committed suicide. Her mother was institutionalized, and she told me, she said, and I've been on medication since I was in grade school, right, for depression. So she came in with a strong identification of this family. So she said, you know, I have a family history, and there's nothing I can do about it. Well, through my work with her, it got to a point, and you know, to her credit, she put in a lot of work. I gave her a lot of different tools that she could use, and what was amazing, Allison and Kim, that was how her story changed. Her story changed where she said, I remember the day she came, and she said, my depression is something that I something that I have to deal with, but I've learned how to manage it. So it changed from a family history that was inescapable to something that she could change and manage on her own. And so she actually, it took her a while, but she actually was able to. It wasn't me, because I don't prescribe medicines, but she approached her prescriber, and eventually it took a couple of times, and it was a very slow process, but something she wanted to do, and she was able to titrate all her medication. She felt she had enough tools and ways of working with the ups and downs of life that she could, felt she could do it without that. And that's not always the case. Sometimes people use a combination of the two. Medication and different kinds of, therapy tools, but, you know, everyone's different, but, so I would say it's not, you know, it's there might be a tendency in a family, but it doesn't mean that we can't learn how to manage that.
Right. And I want to go, I kind of want to, tree off of this a little bit. I used to be on medication for, antidepressant, anxiety, and then OCD and tendencies. I was on it for quite a while, but I didn't really like how it made me feel, and I gained a lot of weight on it, so I turned to exercise. And so I, you know, it's probably been a good 10 years since I've been on medication for it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just found that I didn't like the way it made me feel. I didn't like the way I, you know, it just made me feel like I was a zombie being on that, you know? And so
sure.
I turned to working on my health and, you know, being more active. And I think that's helped some. I mean, I know I still have some of those tendencies, but I don't think it's as bad. I don't, you know, I don't know if I mean, there's some people that, yes, maybe they have it so bad that they do need to be on medication, but I sometimes feel like there's alternatives, you know, like if you focus on some, you know, something else to better yourself, that maybe that might
right. help and you could well. Absolutely. And you could do both. It doesn't have to be either or.
Right.
That's one thing I like to stress. Yeah. I like to stress with people is not, you know, using medication is not exclusive of also maybe, you know, doing, you know, other positive things for yourself as a way of mm-hmm. helping yourself. Mm-hmm. So, or going to seek help for depression or anxiety and learning how to deal with it mm-hmm. in a different way or learning, you know, coping skills. There are a lot of skills out there that have been shown to work really well. And just a lot of, you know, they don't teach these things when you're in high school. They don't, these are not things that you learn in college classes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I was interested in psychology when I was young and when I was in college because I thought it would help me, but it didn't, you know, because mm-hmm. that's not what it's there for when you're in school. That's too bad. But so the nice thing is that, you know, overcoming the worry about asking for help, I think in our culture, our society, sometimes we feel that we're supposed to do it on our own.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we're really all connected with everything. If you go into a store and you get some food from the store, you're getting something that was part of an interconnected web, a network mm-hmm. of people, you know, that planned that food originally, that processed it, packaged it, shipped it, and so on. And so, you know, it's really an illusion to think that we're all so independent. We are connected to one another. We could use that. And I think there's a lot of resources. You asked that earlier in the program,
mm-hmm.
you know, about asking for resources. And I really strongly encourage people to, you know, whether through the internet, to look up other community resources for mental health, for example, or for depression, anxiety, or different individual therapists that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of ways to find people. And no matter, and there are people who do sliding scales if you don't have a lot of financial resources who can help. So so the main thing is not to be afraid of helping. I remember a lady came to see me who was, you know, her life went on hard times. She lost everything. She was sleeping. She'd sold her house, or was repossessed, I should say. And
wow.
before it was sold, again, she had the key. She was sleeping. There was no furniture. You know, she didn't have anywhere to go. And her marriage had broken up. She lost everything. And I encouraged her to start to find services, start to get help and seek resources. And I remember, you know, she had some shame around that at first,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
And she started to do and started to realize that if you receive help, you're also giving something to somebody. You're allowing somebody to give something to you, which mm-hmm. is a giving to them. Mm-hmm. By receiving, you're actually giving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful thing. She was able to learn that for herself, and she you know, she picked her life up again, started going again. It was a beautiful thing for me to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she did it in part by her willingness to ask for help.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes, yeah, that is the hardest thing for, you know, like you said, someone to do because they feel
mm-hmm.
shame or guilt, or, you know, they'll feel like they're being judged because they're asking.
Yeah. Or that.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And so many people go without asking that, and then something, you know, may traumatic happen in their life, maybe they end their lives because they're not getting the help that they need because they feel like they're going to be judged or ridiculed or something to that effect.
Right, or they view it as a weakness
right.
in some way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, I was very fortunate. I got, you know, when I went through my mental health struggles in my late teens and early 20s,
mm-hmm.
You know, my mother was there, and she helped me, and she helped me find somebody. And then I was fortunate that I found somebody who was a wonderful clinician and who really, you know, I'm very grateful to this day. In fact, many, many years later, I called him up. I don't even know. I wasn't sure he'd even remember me. It was like 40 years later. You know, just to thank him. And I think he did remember. And, you know, sometimes, you know, there are what I call benefactors in our life. And a benefactor can come in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. A benefactor could be that kindly neighbor when you were a kid, right? Or maybe a teacher who understood you when nobody else did, or a friend or a family member. And so there are, and, you know, I like to think even our deceased ancestors, if they were here today, mm-hmm. would want to help us and wish the best for us, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there really are all these people who are benefactors, and we have to, you know, connect with them and say, it's okay. I'm you know, how fortunate it is to have a benefactor in your life. And we're benefactors for others mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. You know, we can be somebody receiving help, and we'll get a chance to be a benefactor for someone else.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that as well. Let's see here. We're almost out of
Well, time. I want to say you're a benefactor by doing this program.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I'm benefiting you. Yeah, for getting your information out there, and so hopefully somebody then will in return come back to you, and it's just it's like a circle. It really is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And can I just mention our website?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I was going to ask you for any of your social media. So if anybody has questions or wants to reach out to you,
Oh, yeah. So they can find me on my website. You could email me through that. I have a newsletter. You can subscribe to that on the website. It's mindfulpractices.com. That's MINDFUL1L practices.com. All one word. And yeah, I'd love to. You can see all about my different books and different kind of teaching that I have there and available CDs and so forth. But yeah, I'd love to hear from anybody or any other follow up questions you have about our talk today.
Yes, absolutely. And you said do you do some classes? Do you do like Zoom or Skype or anything for people that aren't around you that do you do anything?
I do have some programs mm-hmm. where I teach Zoom classes to groups.
Oh, okay.
So you know, you would, if you subscribe to my newsletter, you'd find out about that.
Okay.
Sometimes they're for therapists, but anybody would benefit because I teach mindfulness skills in those classes. I also have some online trainings where I actually teach mindfulness on my online training. So those are recorded videos, but you know, you'd stream
right.
them.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, are there? Okay. Yeah. It cut out just a little bit, but I think I heard it. You have some classes and things that you have done that are streaming, correct?
Yeah, okay. Correct. So they can get those and stream them if they want. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have like a YouTube channel or anything, or is this just all on your website?
It's really on my website.
Okay.
Yeah. I also have a Facebook page for people that are interested in like doing meditations, or mm-hmm. it's facebook.com/MNDFUL MNDFUL practices. What's mindful practices without the I. Okay. I've taken the I out of mindful.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So that way we can just add this to our social media as well. So that way, whoever may have not caught it all, I like to just put it out there in the universe for everyone to see as well. So that way they can contact you if they want to.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Classes, or if they want to get your book. Like you said, he's got several books out. You also have, like I said, the Traveler's one that I thoroughly enjoyed. I just read that one. You can find it on Amazon.
Oh, thank you.
John Hunt Publishing, and I'm sure if you just Google it, you can find it on pretty much any website for books. So, and then also, I just want to give a quick shout out. Thank you for everybody who was in chat tonight. Thank you for everybody who was not in chat but listening. We do appreciate each and every one of you listening to us tonight. Also, I just want to let you guys know that Saturday I'm running a live show. I don't usually do those on weekends, but this is for all of our UK listeners. Appreciation. We have a great following there in the UK, and so they're not usually up this time to listen to us live. So we're doing one for them at 2:00 in the afternoon Saturday. I'm going to have Spirit Vision Paranormal Research on. They're going to join us. So make sure to join us for that one as well. And thank you once again, Donald, for joining us. It was a pleasure talking to you. You are a great wealth of knowledge in all of this, and it was greatly appreciated. Like, this was something, a different topic for us to do
tonight.
Yeah, it was like a breath of fresh air, and so I greatly appreciate it.
Well, it was very kind of you to say, and it was wonderful being on the show with you, but with you both.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you everybody again. Like I said, join us Saturday at 2 o'clock Central. That'll be 8 p.m. GMT time and 3 Eastern. To kind of thank all of our UK listeners. So, like I said, I don't usually do that very often, but join us for that one next week. We will be talking about AI and transhumanism with Christopher Macklin. So tune in for that one as well. Thank you, everybody.